ओम ज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं। वंदेहं श्री गुरुः श्रीयुत पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे। मूकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणं। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्य नामने गौरत्विषे नमः। हे कृष्ण करुणासिन्धु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। सो वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग a very important verse yesterday evening. This verse is very important and we will continue discussion on this verse today as well. So before we begin, we will chant this verse again and then we will have a brief revision of what we discussed yesterday, because it's not so important for us to know so many things, but even if we know a few things, but we know them well, then that is good. Especially when it comes to the path of devotion, there are a few fundamental things we clearly need to know. Scholarship is not an essential qualification for bhakti. So let us chant this verse. Those of you who have the sheets given out yesterday, you may refer to that. Or if you've already memorized this verse, then that's very good. And if you have the sheet and someone next to you doesn't have it, you may please share this with your neighbor so that everyone can chant together. Also, if you remember, we had struck a deal yesterday. What was the deal? Yes, you would like try to memorize the verse, or at least you would begin. So how many of you have begun to try to memorize the verse? Okay, that's nice. Some hands. So hopefully within a few days you would have memorized it. Hopefully by tomorrow.
Anyabhilashita shunyam ज्ञानकर्माद्यनावृतम् Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama.
Please chant.
Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Kulena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama.
Ladies, anyone?
Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Ruttama.
Now in the third line we say Anukulyena Krishnanu, and then in the last line we say Shilanam. Actually the word is not Krishnanu, it is Krishna and then Anushilanam. But because of the meter, we have split the word Anushilanam, Anu with Krishna and then Shilanam below. So we'll just repeat the translation once again. This is translation from Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita. When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. Now let us recapitulate some important points that we discussed yesterday. Let's do it by me asking questions, so it'll be easy to revise, and also for those devotees who could not come yesterday, it'll be a nice revision. So what is the importance of this verse? It is regarding devotional service, but there are so many verses about devotional service, so why is this so important? But in every verse, all the words have meaning.
It's the Paribhasha Sutra of the Bhakti Vasanta
Sindhu. Yes. What does that mean, the Paribhasha Sutra?
In this verse, the whole content of the book is well defined through this verse.
It is in this one verse that the whole content of the book, the thesis, is summarized. So why is it important that this is the Paribhasha Sutra of this book?
It makes us a pure devotee,
yes. So basically this verse gives us the definition of devotional service. The most concise, precise, complete definition of devotional service. It gives us, in other words, the goal of our life. Therefore, this verse is very important for us. Rupa Goswami has written this book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and this one verse is a foundation for the whole book. So this is the importance. Now, what kind of characteristics are there in this verse that help us to define or understand bhakti better? Two kinds of characteristics we talked about. One is primary characteristics, also called Swarup Lakshan. Swarup means main, Lakshan means characteristics. And the other is the Tatastha Lakshan, or the marginal characteristics. So in this verse, what is the Swarup Lakshan? Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. What does it mean? Now, how many parts did we divide this into? Three parts. What are the three parts? Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. So let's talk about Anushilanam. How many parts did we divide this into? Two parts. What are they? Anu and Shilanam. What is Anu? To follow after, to repeat, to do something repeatedly, to do something constantly. And what is Shilanam? It means to, it's a verb. What does it mean? To do what? To practice, to meditate, to worship, to serve. In other words, what is the significance of this word Shilanam? It implies what? Activity. That bhakti is an active process. It's not for lazy people. It's full of activity. People think that bhakti is for sentimental and lazy people. Gyan is for the intelligent people and karma is for the active people. Have you heard these kind of theories? It's quite popular. So, Rupa Goswami negates these ideas by using the word Anushilanam. It's not just Shilanam. It's not just service, practice and so on. It is constant practice. And what kind of practice or activities are referred to when we talk of Shilanam? You mentioned service, meditation, yes, but they can be done in what ways? Through the body, through the mind, and through one's words, right? We see that in Krishna consciousness, we are chanting the holy name, we are chanting, we are reading the scriptures, we speak about Krishna, about our service. That's how we use our words. The body we use for what purposes? Can you give some example? How do you use the physical body to serve Krishna? To sell the books, to cook for the Lord, clean the temple, offer obeisances, worship the deity. So all these are acts of service. Do you know that even brushing your teeth and taking a bath is a part of bhakti? If you use your body for Krishna's service, not otherwise. There are many people who take bath in the world. I wish more would, but still, there are quite a few who do. But doesn't mean that their bath is bhakti. But devotees who use their body for Krishna's service, their sleeping is a part of their devotional service. Their bathing, their eating, everything is a part of devotional service. If they are using their body, mind and words constantly in Krishna's service. How can we use our mind in Krishna's service? by thinking of Krishna, by reading scriptures and meditating upon it, by planning how to please Krishna, making plans for devotional service, managing the temple and thinking of so many ways in which we can push ahead this mission and manage the temple, and also to keep our mind from wondering when the class is going on, to keep our mind from relaxing and going to sleep when the class is going on or when we are chanting. So we can serve Krishna with our body, with our mind, with our words. Also, there are two kinds of activities that we do. We talked about positive and negative. What is the meaning of that? You remember? Yam and Niyam. So could you explain that? Some positive things, some negative things. Meaning what? Yes, some things that help us in our bhakti, we do that. Like chanting, hearing, associating, worshipping. So these are positive activities that we do with the body, mind and words. Then what are the negative activities referred to? Following the regulative principles means that we avoid certain things. We avoid intoxication. We avoid illicit sex. We avoid gambling. We avoid meat eating. We avoid as much as possible the association of non-devotees. We can also do these things with our body, mind and words. We avoid these things with our body, mind and words. So therefore, anushilanam is with body, mind and words. It can be positive, it can be negative also. So then the question is, whom shall we serve? So what was the next word in the definition? Krishna. So what does Krishna mean? Is Krishna the impersonal absolute? Krishna is that indescribable source whom we cannot conceive of? Is that Krishna? Who are we referring to? We are referring to first and foremost the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the person Lord Krishna, who is playing the flute, who resides in Vrindavan, who herds the cows, who plays Rasa Leela with the gopis, who is the darling of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. That Krishna we are referring to. But are we referring to only him? Then who else? All his expansions, his incarnations, like Narsingadev, Lord Ramachandra, and so on. In other words, when we talk of devotional service, you talk of devotion to not just Krishna of Vrindavan, you talk of devotion to all the Lord's different expansions. And what else? The Guru, why so? Because he is a representative of Krishna, and the word anushilan, anu also means following, if you remember. So we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and therefore we make advancement in our Krishna consciousness. The bona fide spiritual master will not teach us the path of material advancement. He will teach us the path of spiritual advancement. So therefore the worship of the Guru is very important in Rupa Goswami's description. He gives a lot of importance to these elements. So if you say that devotional service is only to Krishna and his expansions and nobody else, then it's too limiting a definition. It excludes the Guru, who is the via medium to Krishna. And what else does it exclude? This, if you consider the word Krishna to mean only Krishna, then what else does it exclude? Pure devotees, all the paraphernalia of Krishna, in fact anything connected to Krishna, you also exclude if you think Krishna is only Krishna. But Krishna is the complete absolute truth. Therefore Krishna includes not just himself and his expansions, but also includes his holy abode, his name, his paraphernalia, his devotees and so on, his deity. So when we say Krishna Anushilanam, we are serving Krishna, his expansions, the spiritual master, the pure devotees, the holy dham, the holy name, Krishna's everything connected to Krishna. Krishna's prasadam. So therefore the word Krishnanushilanam has to be understood in this way. Then we also saw that when you worship or when you serve Krishna constantly, this definition is not sufficient in and of itself. What were the examples we saw first of all? Kamsa. What was Kamsa's speciality? He was constantly thinking of Krishna. 24 hours a day, perhaps much more than we can. He was thinking all the time about Krishna. So it was Krishnanushilanam. But still, we do not consider that to be bhakti. Why? Because it was not done in a favorable spirit. In other words, if you define bhakti simply as Krishnanushilanam, again, it could be too extensive, the definition. It could include people like Kamsa. It could also include people like Shishupal who are always talking about Krishna. But we don't consider Shishupal a devotee because his speech was not done with a favorable intention. So you add the word anukulyena, which means favorable. By adding the word anukulyena, now you have restricted the definition of devotees to those who are favorably acting for Krishna. Otherwise, the definition would have become too broad. And many others would have also had to be considered devotees. Similarly, if you say anukulyena Krishnanu shilanam, and if you define anukulyena as being that which brings pleasure to Krishna, samsiddhir haritoshanam, to please Krishna is the goal of life, even that could be too extensive a definition. It could include others who are not devotees. Some examples? Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravan. Why so? How were they pleasing Krishna? How was the fighting giving pleasure to the Lord? Because fighting is also one of the secondary mellows. And Krishna likes to enjoy this fighting spirit sometimes. And in Goloka Vrindavan, it's not possible, so he comes here to this material world sometimes to fight. So he likes the good fight. And he was enjoying it. And therefore, Hiranyaksha was giving him that pleasure of fighting the good fight. So he was giving pleasure to Krishna. So if you understand the word anukulyena to mean that service which gives pleasure to Krishna, it is still not complete, because then it means that Hiranyaksha, Ravan, etc. are devotees. And on the other hand, it becomes too limiting and excludes genuine devotees from the definition of being a devotee. Like Mother Yashoda. Why so? Because she caused displeasure to Krishna. When? When the milk was boiling over, spilling over, and she put Krishna down and went to attend to the stove. And Krishna was angry. So she displeased Krishna. Therefore, she is not a devotee. So the word anukulyena, if it's taken to mean that which gives pleasure to Krishna, we could end up with such contradictory conclusions. So therefore, we understand the word anukulyena to mean not necessarily that which gives pleasure to Krishna, but that which is intended to give pleasure to Krishna. In other words, the essential element of bhakti is that one must have that motivation to want to please Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. I may or may not succeed in pleasing Krishna, but my intention is intensely to please Krishna. If Krishna is incidentally pleased by some demoniac person, that is not bhakti. So therefore, bhakti is something very positive. So that is the purport of the word anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. And this forms the primary characteristics of bhakti. This is ordinary bhakti. And now we are going to talk about something extra, something special, which when added to ordinary bhakti makes it pure bhakti. The highest bhakti, bhaktir uttama. Uttama bhakti, first class devotional service, as Prabhupada says here. Pure devotional service. Ultimately, we don't want to be only ordinary devotees, isn't it? What do we want to be? Pure devotees. So what's the difference between the men and the boys? What's the difference between pure devotional service and ordinary devotional service? So the difference is the marginal characteristics. So what are the marginal characteristics? Firstly, anyabhilashita shunyam. And secondly, jnana karmadi anavritam. So let's first talk about anyabhilashita shunyam. Shunyam means zero, not existing. Anya means others. And abhilashita refers to desires. In other words, in that service to Krishna, even with a desire to please Krishna, there should not be any other desire. Krishna brooks no competitor. He says, sarvadharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Surrender only to me. Not that we share Krishna with somebody else. So I may want to please Krishna, but I also have some desire to please my senses. So I'm sharing Krishna with my senses. So therefore, any service that is not intended for the pleasure of Krishna is called a material desire. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, Atmendriya Priti Vancha Bole, what is that? What is Atmendriya Priti Ichha? Atmendriya Priti Vancha Tare Boli Kam. Kam means material desire. Krishnendriya Priti Ichha Tare Prema Nam. So when you work for the pleasure of Krishna's senses, that is called love, prem or bhakti. Atmendriya Priti Ichha. But when you want to work for your own sense gratification, Tare Boli Kam. That is called lust. Lust is another word for material desire. Any desire other than the desire to please Krishna and to serve Him is lust or material. So the word lust has a very broad connotation. So now reflect. We are talking of something that's very exalted, isn't it? When you want to serve Krishna, you should have no desire other than the desire to serve Krishna. So if anyone has any desire other than the desire to serve Krishna, then that person cannot be a pure devotee. Isn't it? Correct? Okay, so now please hold on to that statement. Don't deny it later. Yes, you have already agreed now. So let's consider now. Draupadi is a pure devotee or not? Why is she a pure devotee? She's always pleasing Krishna. Okay. Can you give some examples of how exalted was Draupadi? She surrendered to Krishna. You know that it was Draupadi who would bail out her husbands many times. When they were in the forest and Durvasa Muni came with his 10,000 disciples, having been induced to come there by Duryodhana very cunningly, he came there unannounced at the time for prasadam, lunch, when Draupadi and her five husbands had already taken prasadam, and she had this akshay patra, this gift from the sun god that could produce unlimited food for the day, but it would stop producing food the moment Draupadi finished eating for the day. And Durvasa Muni came just when Draupadi had finished. And there was nothing left in the Akshay Patra. Akshay means imperishable. Patra means vessel. And Yudhishthir Maharaj was in a quandary. All the Pandavas were discussing what to do now, what to do, what to do. Then Yudhishthir Maharaj said, let's buy time. Please get the Brahmana to go to the river to take bath and do his Gayatri and all these mantras and let him come back. By the time we'll try to work out what we can do. So then Yudhishthir Maharaj requested Durvasa Muni, please take your bath, chant your Sandhya, your Gayatri prayers and come back and we'll have a feast ready for you. Although Yudhishthir Maharaj didn't have the faintest idea how that feast would come about. And then they came to Draupadi. What to do now? Draupadi, you got to do something. What could Draupadi do? She only called out to Krishna. And Krishna came at her calling. And he walked in as if he was just in the neighborhood. Although he was far away in Dwarka. And then he just said, show me that Akshay Patra. And he saw, give me some, there's nothing left there. Let me see. He saw there was one grain there. He tasted the grain. Oh, I'm full now. I'm absolutely full. I'm completely satisfied. Yasmin tushte jagat tushtam. When he, the Supreme Lord, is satisfied, then everyone is satisfied. So when Krishna's belly became full, then Durvasa Muni and his 10,000 disciples bathing found something strange. They found as if their stomachs were as full as if they had eaten 10 people's meals. And they shuddered to think of the prospect of eating again with Yudhishthir Maharaj. And it would be an insult to Yudhishthir Maharaj to have go back and he would have a feast arranged and then we don't eat anything. It will be a disgrace. So let's slip away. And when they didn't come for a long time, Yudhishthir Maharaj sent Bhima. And Bhima went with his stentorian voice, says, Muniji, please come. And hearing Bhima's voice, they all fled even faster. So we see how much Draupadi loved Krishna and how much Krishna loved Draupadi that he came at her call. There are numerous instances like this. Now let's talk about one particular example. The infamous episode where Draupadi's attempted disrobing took place in the open assembly by Duryodhana's younger brother, Dushasan. Now you all know this story. What happened at that time? What did Draupadi do first? She tried with her hand, she tried with her own arms to protect. Both arms, then one arm. She was calling out for her husbands, for the elders, but nobody would come to help. Eventually, what did she do? She raised her arms and called out Govinda. And then Krishna incarnated in her cloth, in her sari, and protected her honor. So now, when Draupadi called out to Krishna to help her, was it for Krishna's pleasure? What was her purpose? Why was Draupadi calling out for Krishna? To save her own honor. Isn't it? Did it have anything to do with serving Krishna? Not directly. Even indirectly. Yes, she had faith in Krishna. She called him out. But when she called out for Krishna, what was the reason for calling out? Krishna, I want to serve you better. Krishna, can I bring this prasadam for you? No. What was she calling for? She wanted to be saved. So she was calling out for whom? For Krishna or for herself? For herself. So we have already seen, and you have stated that very clearly, that any desire other than the desire to serve and please Krishna is a material desire. And anyone who has a material desire is not a pure devotee. Therefore, Draupadi is not a pure devotee. That's a conclusion that comes logically from your own statement. Isn't it? So, Draupadi is calling out for something that is not Krishna's service. She's not calling out for Krishna that, Krishna, I want to serve you. Please come before me. No. Please save me. Save my honor. However important the honor may be for a lady in the society, nevertheless, it's still something material. It's not spiritual. So what is the answer? Yes, that's true. Krishna reciprocates even if you have some material desires. Krishna is very kind. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tams tathaiva bhajamyaham. So Krishna does reciprocate with his devotees. But the point is that was Draupadi approaching him for something that was for his pleasure? No. Yes, it was a state of emergency. That is right. And therefore, you see, Rupa Goswami wants to make the definition of bhakti more accurate. If you say that bhakti, pure bhakti, means that you should have no desire at any point in time other than the desire to serve Krishna and please him, then by that strict, rigid definition, Draupadi is not a devotee, pure devotee. That's obviously not the case. Draupadi is a pure devotee. So then, you have to amend the definition a little bit to accommodate such situations as Draupadi found herself in. And that is right. For such emergency situations, which are life-threatening, which pertain to self-preservation, which are an inevitable part of our existence in this material world, like life and death matters, or matters of eating, of evacuation, so many other matters here, which sometimes are very crucial for self-preservation. In such emergency situations, if one calls out for Krishna helplessly, having no other shelter, then such calling out, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, is not a fault. It doesn't detract from our pure devotional service. It doesn't exclude one from bhakti, from pure bhakti. One is still a bhakti. One is still a bhakta, a pure bhakta. Of course, it should not become a habit. We shouldn't make every little thing an emergency. Then we are not in pure devotional service. It's something that comes out suddenly, out of one's control. It is against our basic devotional nature. We don't like to ask Krishna for anything material. We don't like to ask Krishna anything for ourselves. So it is not the nature of a devotee to ask Krishna for something like this. But sometimes, all of a sudden, situations arise as a part of our existence in this world where it goes out of control of the devotee. And the devotee cries out for Krishna's help. And such calling out is against the devotee's nature, in the sense that the devotee doesn't want to call Krishna but is helpless. The devotee is not doing it with a desire to want to gratify the senses. Then that would not be pure devotional service. It's something sudden, something temporary, and once it's over, then it's over. So therefore, the word abhilasha indicates desire in Sanskrit. So, had the definition been anya abhilasha shunyam, that means there should be no other desire other than the desire to please Krishna, then that would have been too exclusive a definition, too limiting a definition, and even pure devotees like Draupadi and Arjun and many others, even the Brajavasis for that matter, when they cried out to Krishna for help, for protection, they would all be excluded from this definition of bhakti. And therefore, Rupa Goswami has not used the word anya abhilasha shunyam. What has he used instead of abhilasha? Please see your book, your verse carefully. What does he say? Abhilashita. So what is the difference between abhilasha and abhilashita? Abhilasha means desire. Abhilashita means the nature of desiring. Draupadi desired to have Krishna come for her protection. But it was not her nature to all the time request Krishna to come for fulfillment of material desires. That was not her nature. She was a selfless, pure devotee. But being in that awkward, emergency, desperate situation, she called out for Krishna. So such calling is actually an ornament in her bhakti. We remember Draupadi for her helpless calling out, isn't it? So it's not a blemish on her bhakti, rather it's an ornament. It glorifies her bhakti. So we remember Draupadi, just one of the important things we remember Draupadi is that. So therefore the acharyas explain that such calling out for Krishna or such emergency desires do not necessarily conflict with our bhakti. And therefore the word abhilashita instead of abhilasha. Last year when we discussed this topic, I had given two or three other instances that we saw amongst devotees. One devotee, I remember, a Western devotee, had come to India. And as you know, that when people come from the West to India, they usually have problem with the water and the food. And if you have the wrong water, wrong food, you get a stomach upset. Sometimes you get diarrhea. So here was this devotee who was walking on the street, busy street. And there was that overwhelming urge. The call of nature was extremely strong. The stomach was upset. And this devotee had diarrhea. And in the middle of a busy road with traffic and no toilet in sight anywhere, no public toilet anywhere, and this devotee was in a complete anxiety-filled situation. Didn't know what to do, where to go, where to find a cab, where to do anything in this crowded street, what to do. Have you ever been in such situations? It can be difficult, you can imagine. It can be difficult. So you mentioned that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions when you talk of self-preservation, it's not just life and death, it could be matters of eating, even evacuation. These are highly emergency situations. Now evacuation has nothing to do with Krishna, isn't it? Right? So then this devotee was mentioning later that he cried out for Krishna. Krishna! Very loudly cried out. Must have startled a few people around. He cried out. And somehow by Krishna's grace, the stomach behaved itself for a few minutes. And then he was eventually able to get somewhere and do whatever was required. So then he was asking, so was that against pure devotional service? I called out to Krishna. Is it against the principles of bhakti or is it what? I called out for Krishna. But what is it? So now what would you say? What would you answer? Was it pure devotional service or it wasn't? Please remember that evacuation has nothing to do with your pleasing Krishna. So is it or isn't it? What do you say? It's not a fault. It's not a defect on the bhakti. Because where else can a devotee go in times of distress? Krishna is the devotee's only shelter. So it's only natural that when there is some extraordinary situation like that, which would cause tremendous embarrassment, if a devotee is taking shelter of Krishna, there's no harm. But the devotee doesn't like to test Krishna. So a devotee takes precautions. A devotee does things that normally a person with some intelligence is expected to do. But when you're caught unawares and you cry out for Krishna's help, it's not a fault on one's bhakti. Similarly, another devotee was narrating an incident one time when he was traveling in a train, a long distance train from Calcutta to Mumbai. As you know, it's a very long journey. And trains in India can be very crowded. And he had to go all of a sudden, so he couldn't make the reservation. And therefore, he just went into an ordinary compartment. And he was standing. For those of you who have traveled in Indian trains long distance, you know how it is. So he was standing near the door, which is also near the toilet. And it was crowded everywhere. There was no place practically even to stand. People were sitting on the floor, on the seats, outside the toilets, everywhere there were people. And he was somehow just managing to squeeze in and stand. And he was getting tired as the hours were passing by. And then he said, finally I was asking Krishna, I was thinking, should I ask Krishna for a seat to sit on or I shouldn't ask? Is it pure devotional service or it isn't pure devotional? What is it? He was confused. And he said he resolved the contradiction in his mind by asking Krishna, Krishna, if you so desire, please give me a seat. So, he worked out a good compromise that didn't make him feel so bad. So that he wouldn't have himself to blame. If he got a seat, well, it was Krishna's desire. So, Krishna desired me and I did it. So is that pure devotional service or it isn't pure devotional service? So basically, yes. I remember another incident. There was a brahmachari and he was traveling in a local train in Mumbai. If you've been unfortunate enough to travel in any local train in Mumbai, you may sympathize or empathize with this brahmachari situation. In the peak hours, it's so crowded that you can't get in. And if somehow you've been inside from before, then you can't come out. Even if your station has arrived, then you just can't come out. And if there's a whole crowd that behind you that wants to come out, then you have to come out even if you don't want to come out. You just carry it through. So this brahmachari, somehow or the other, he just managed to wriggle out, pushing, shoving, with great, using all his strength and energy. Somehow or the other, he just managed to step on the platform, put one foot down, and he had one foot inside and he was about to take it out and his bag was stuck inside. He had a shoulder bag. And that got stuck between some people. And then the train started. And then he didn't know what to do. So he loudly shouted, Krishna! And immediately the bag was released, his foot was released, and he was sound and safe and sound. And he was thinking, is it pure bhakti? Is it not pure bhakti? We chanted Krishna's name. We called out loudly. So what is it? Actually, if he hadn't got free, it could have been a dangerous situation. He may have fallen down on the platform, maybe got under the train, or anything could have happened. So therefore, let's come down to our practical day-to-day life. So in such extreme situations, if a devotee is calling out to Krishna, it's not a fault. At the same time, we should try to see that it doesn't become a habit for us to call Krishna for every little thing in our life. Krishna, please can you make sure that I get that rasgulla, it doesn't get over before I reach the table. Krishna, can you please make sure that I get this and I get that. So this is especially for those dire emergencies, for critical situations, when one can of course pray to Krishna. Even in Prabhupada's situation, we see when he was on the Jaladuta, the ship that took him from Calcutta port to America, he suffered two heart attacks. And what was his prayer? His prayer was, my dear Lord, I am a puppet in your hands. He has written that bhajan, beautiful bhajan, Markini, Bhagavad, Dharma and others, in which he prayed to the Lord that, my dear Lord, I am a puppet in your hands, and I am just simply dancing the way you make me dance. If you want me to go to this foreign land and preach your message, then it's up to you. Or if you want me to die here, that's also up to you. So Krishna surrendered. Prabhupada surrendered like that. He left it to Krishna. So Prabhupada is teaching us that when it comes to critical situations in our life, we should depend on Krishna and leave it to Krishna, whichever way He wants us to do. And where there is some possibility of us doing something about it, Krishna has given us some intelligence, He has given us some ability, we should try to use it to the extent that is reasonably there. And the rest we should depend on Krishna. Therefore we see Krishna or Rupa Goswami has used the word here, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. Can we please distribute that sheet? Yes, so that's the... We gave two sheets yesterday. This is the third one. So take one and pass the rest. So this covers some of the points that we have discussed today. Are there any questions, or we'll go on to further discuss this verse on this point? Yes.
Two issues here. One is that you gave the examples where you were in a situation and we were talking about self-preservation. On those lines, if somebody asks for somebody other's self-preservation, something is happening in front of a devotee's eyes, and somebody is about to, maybe a non-devotee or a person about to the parents as opposed to coming to the other person. Maybe he cries out to Krishna for preservation of self-preservation of that person. How does that fit into...
The question is that in the instances that we talked about, it was basically the self-preservation or the emergency that pertained to the devotee who was calling out for Krishna. What about if we are calling out for Krishna for somebody else? That person may be a devotee or may not be a devotee. Well, it makes a difference whether that person is a devotee or not a devotee. Some difference. However, as a larger principle, this calling out for Krishna is a sudden temporary phenomenon that is out, that is beyond the control of the devotee. That's the point. It's not a pre-planned, nice calling out for Krishna. Not like that. It's something happens all of a sudden, and in desperation the devotee calls out for Krishna. So what to speak of others, perhaps we shouldn't do the same even for ourselves. When there is somebody else in difficulty, we should try to do what is helpful, certainly. But we also have to use our spiritual intelligence, because it depends on what kind of difficulty that person is undergoing. We don't know what Krishna has in mind for that devotee. So we do what is reasonably possible for us. But we understand also that ultimately it is Krishna in control. And Krishna in His own kindness and mercy is doing the best for that person. Krishna is more that person's well-wisher than we can even imagine. So while we may try to do our bit, whatever we can, as our duty, but ultimately it is up to Krishna.
And the second issue is about the mood of Shri Mahalaya's prayers. That if she wishes for Kalanti is to come to her so that she can remember Krishna. So again, how does that fit into this question?
How does Kunti Maharani's statement that she is praying for calamities to come so she can remember Krishna? Well, in one sense, she is being humble. It wasn't that Kunti Maharani was not remembering Krishna at other times. But in times of calamity, the remembrance was more intense. The Pandavas' case is very extreme, because a kind of tribulations they had to undergo is uncommon. We complain about our difficulties in life, But what are our difficulties compared to the difficulties the Pandavas had to undergo? Just think of all the humiliation, of all the physical, mental, financial difficulties they had. Unimaginable. So therefore, that was definitely something extraordinary. And each of them was a life-threatening situation, one bigger than the previous one. Cannibals. I mean, Rakshasas trying to eat them in the forest. I mean, Duryodhan trying to burn the family when they were sleeping in the house, in the Lakshagraha, the house of lack. Bhima being tied, poisoned, and then thrown into the river. Cheating in the game of dice, and then being exiled, being deprived of their kingdom. As Kshatriyas, that's something very painful. And then being exiled for 13 years in the forest. So many such instances. So therefore, Kunti Maharani is praying that such calamities do make us more intensely remember Krishna. Because then the devotee realizes, I really have nobody but you. Somebody else? Yes, you had a point, Prabhu?
I just wanted to comment on the first question. There's an interesting story of one devotee in Belgium. He was distributing books. And as he was doing the books on the street, then a gang of robbers came and they went into one jewelry shop. And then they did whatever they did inside and then what much came out and started running. And he chased one of the robbers. And he turned and he just shook him a few times. I mean, he survived, but that's one example. Trying to help the situation.
That's a rather extreme situation. So we'll remember the next time we see some robbers robbing a jewelry store. But yes, sometimes you can never know what kind of dangers lurk everywhere. Yes, Mataji.
I was thinking that not to remember, not to call out for Krishna every moment.
Not to call out every moment. Yes, every moment we should call for Krishna, but not for little material things. We should call out for Krishna. Yes, certainly, that's our perfection. But not for little things, not for material things, not for things that have nothing to do with Krishna's pleasure. That is the point.
But if all these anarthas that we feel is again coming up and we say, Krishna, please help now to fight.
Yes, that is bona fide. That is bona fide. The question is that these anarthas in our heart keep coming up and we call out for Krishna to remove those anarthas, then that desire is meant to help us serve Krishna better. So it is for Krishna's pleasure because Krishna wants to see our heart pure. Ultimately, Krishna is in our heart, and if our heart is dirty, then Krishna is not so comfortable sitting in a dirty place. Just as we don't like to sit in a dirty room, we clean it up. So similarly, when we are cleaning our heart, we are making a clean place for Krishna to reside, and we are also going to be able to serve Krishna better. We are going to please Him more. So that's a bona fide desire. There's no problem. We should call out for Krishna like that. Yes?
When there are calamities, natural calamities, or even just general sort of material pain that you see of others who are not devotees, and one prays to Krishna or one prays to Krishna for those material sort of distresses to be removed from general things. Is that not devotion?
The question is that one sees so many major calamities taking place in this world, people undergoing so much distress. So when we pray for them, is that not part of bhakti, right? Is that the question? That is the quality of a devotee. A devotee is paradukha-dukhi, which means a devotee becomes sorrowful upon seeing the sorrow of others. Materialistic people are envious. So sometimes they become paradukha-sukhi. They become happy to see somebody suffering. or they are parasukha dukhi, or they become sad to see somebody's happiness. But a devotee is paradukha dukhi, becomes sad to see other people suffering. So whenever there are calamities or there's distress or anyone is suffering in the world, the devotees feel very pained. No doubt about it. So devotional life should make our heart soft. It shouldn't make us hard-hearted. So we shouldn't think that, well, we're not meant to be doing philanthropic work. We are in the path of bhakti. Therefore, serve them right. They got their karma. And they got it. No, but that should, it may be a fact. It may be that they got the result of their karma. But that's not our mentality. Our mentality is, yes, they're suffering because ultimately it's all there. The suffering is going on because they've forgotten Krishna. And we have to give them Krishna and make a solution to the problem. And if there's something reasonably, as I said, that can be done, we can do it. Otherwise, like sometimes we have devotees in different countries which are war-torn, and they go out there and feed prasadam to people. And this is an opportunity for them to actually tell people about Krishna. So we have to think about it in a very intelligent way. So yes, a devotee does feel, but he understands at the same time that simply going out and doing philanthropic work is not the solution. The solution is Krishna consciousness. We have to give people Krishna. All these problems are happening in the world because people are forgetting Krishna. That's the root cause of the problem. So that has to be addressed. Yes.
Lord Chaitanya Sina, there are two cases when the devotees appear to Krishna to see the devotee. And Chodaridas, he was supposed to be Lord Chaitanya. He also prayed, but he has to come to see it. And another case when brother of Ramananda, he was about to be hanged. So he also prayed, but at one place Lord Chaitanya saved somebody in one place.
The question is that there are two cases in which in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, where in Chota Haridasa's case he prayed for his life, but Mahaprabhu didn't, right? Save. In the other case, Ramananda Rai's brother and Mahaprabhu saved. Well, it's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was involved. Chota Haridas committed suicide. That's what they found out later. That's what the devotees thought. But Mahaprabhu was seeing Chota Haridas in his ethereal body, chanting and singing. Only Mahaprabhu could hear him. Others couldn't hear him. So it's not that Chota Haridas had committed a major blunder, but Mahaprabhu simply wanted to teach a lesson to everybody. So he used Chota Haridas as an example of that. And as far as Gopinath Pattanaik, or the brother of Ramananda Rai, Mahaprabhu had nothing to do with it. When everyone came there, oh, he's being hung, he's being sent on the guillotine. Mahaprabhu said, don't bother me with all these things. He didn't pay back his loan. He took money from such and such, the king, and he's not returning it, and it's some financial thing that between them. So he hasn't paid back that. Something went on there. So he said, no, I'm a sannyasi, I can't get involved in these things. That's the stand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took in that case. But as it happened, the king came to know that his son was severely punishing Ramananda Rai's brother like this. And when he came to know, he stopped the killing. Anyone else? Yes.
Is it right to pray for the people who are not Krishna conscious to Krishna so that they can serve Krishna?
Certainly. The question is it right to pray to Krishna for those people who are not in Krishna consciousness? Certainly. Certainly we should pray. Any other? Yes, Mother.
I have a question. When we preach to people and we try to cultivate them, and sometimes they might be very materialistic, and they want certain material things, so to be cured of different things. And if we know that the only way to get them close to God is to know about God and to tell them that whichever desire they have, they should approach God, always very, not very devotional way. But is that right, or we should just be straightforward from the beginning, but then we get into the danger they must not turn ever towards?
So the question is that sometimes when you're cultivating people who are not in devotional service, you're bringing them to Krishna and they have some material difficulty and they're going here and there to solve their problem, and we tell them that at least come to Krishna. Doesn't matter you have some material desire, come to Krishna and he will fulfill it. So is it right to preach like that? That's the question. Perhaps it may be. Because that person is not in a mood to understand pure devotional service. Even when Narad Muni preached to Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva, at the age of 5, was determined to go into the forest and do austerities and get what he wanted. Narad Muni said, "You're only a 5-year-old boy. There's no need for you to go." Dhruva Maharaj was very clear. "My dear Narad Muni, if you can help me, please tell me. Otherwise, please let me go ahead." Clear. He said, "I'm a Kshatriya and for me my mind is made up. Your instructions are beautiful, very good, but for me in my state of mind now, I cannot accept that." So Narad Muni understood, "All right, you go and chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya and your desires will be fulfilled." So you can follow in the footsteps of Narad Muni. Not a problem. Okay, so we'll stop, we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.